Start your day the Torah way, Northwest London, Tuesday, 20th of Tammuz, 19th of July. Rabbi Dr. Samuel Landau, Shlita, Shir HaMaalos, Echoes of Tears. Tears.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's wonderful to be back at Start Your Day the Torah way. You've just begun the 3 weeks, a time of unprecedented mourning in the Jewish calendar. Though it is something which is strange. Normally, when a person goes through a mourning process, we go from a period of greater intensity to reduced intensity. I'm a community rabbi, bread and butter of what a person does to support a family through a process. First, the intensity of aninus, focus of Shiva, of Avelus, the Shloshim for a parent, the year, and then on the anniversary of someone's passing, every year, a yahrzeit. The truth is, a yahrzeit isn't necessarily a grieving occasion. It's a celebration, it's a marking, it's a day where we resonate with our loss. But we don't return to Shiva. We don't go back to that intense grief that we once had. If you were to think about it psychologically, you wouldn't want to go back to that intense grieving. The whole purpose of the Jewish mourning process is to take us on a journey from a greater level of intensity to a reduced level of intensity, where we're able to integrate the person's loss into our lives. We never forget the person that we lost. We live alongside that loss. But it doesn't break us as it did in those first difficult moments. Psychologically speaking, you'd want a person to be able to have that journey. Otherwise, there would be complex grief. There could be depression. There could be anxiety. There could be trauma. And yet we seem to do the very opposite when it comes to mourning the Chorban HaBayis and all the other tragedies that befell us during this time. We dafka want to feel the trauma. We sit on the ground and we cry every year. What is the purpose of these tears? That's the question I'd like to unpack today. How are we to relate to a tragedy that befell us thousands of years ago, to people we never knew, to a building we never visited? And how are we to understand the intensity of that grief? What's the purpose of it? In so doing, I'd like to open up an interpretation of a kapitel of Tehillim that we say very frequently. It's kapitel Kuf Chaf Vav, Shir HaMaalos, which we sing before benching on a Shabbos, on a Yom Tov, and try and analyse what's going on in its words. I'd like to thank Rabbi David Foreman from Aleph Beta for a lot of the content here. Let's dive into the kapitel itself. Let's see if we can understand its deeper meaning. I think if we do that, we'll also reveal something quite powerful about the tears of this time. So it says in Shir HaMaalos, Shir HaMaalos v'Shiv Hashem et Shiv Asiyon Hayinu K'Chomim. We begin Shir HaMaalos by painting a picture of the future. When Hashem will bring back the exiles of Zion, will be like dreamers. There's going to be this time where we are in amazement at our return to our land. Our mouths will be filled with laughter, our tongues with joy. We haven't even necessarily got words for that experience. We haven't been able to internalize what's happened to be able to come out with some sort of form of language. But we're delighted. We're happy, we're home. It's not us that begin to speak. As Yamru Vagoyim, the nations of the world will look at our return and they'll say about us, Higdil Hashem la'asos imele. God should be great to do such a thing. They begin praising God. We don't yet have the words. It's too big on us, this experience. Then, once they've begun to describe Higdil Hashem, we also respond. Higdil Hashem la'asos imanu. God is great to do this with us. Hayinu samechim. We're truly happy. We're okay with the video?
Yeah.
Okay. So we've begun by describing that experience. Then the capital changes. It moves focus, not from a description of the experience, but now to a prayer. Shuva Hashem el Shiviseinu ka'afikim ba'negev. God, return your captives like flash floods in a desert. Every year in Israel, there are warnings that there could be flash floods. What happens is the ground gets very parched, there's a sudden rainfall, and it causes this intense flash flood down towards, say, the Dead Sea. And people who are hiking can be washed away in a flood that can appear in a matter of moments. It's a very dangerous thing. And there are tragedies every year. We're saying, God, return us, return your captives, like flash floods in the desert. Like this intense burst of water, this intense burst of energy. Just take us home. Then the prayer continues, and it becomes even slightly more strange. Hazorim Badima, Barina Itzoda. Those who sow with tears, in joy they will reap the harvest. There's someone who's walking backwards and forwards and they're crying. So this person maybe who's sowing with tears, they're pacing. They're walking here, they're walking there, but they're in tears, they're crying. No se meshech hazara. He's holding his meshech of seeds. Meshech is a difficult word to translate. It doesn't really appear many other places in Tanakh. How do we translate it here? He's holding his seed pouch. He's walking backwards and forwards, he's holding his seed pouch, and he's crying. He should reap. He should reap the produce of his tears. Bo yavo v'rina nosel masov. Come back with songs of joy. He'll come back with songs of joy finally, carrying, rather than carrying his seed pouch, now he'll be carrying his alumot, his alumos. What are those? His sheaves of wheat. Somehow, the seeds that he planted have now been given him a bountiful crop. So this is the capital that I think holds some insight into that question that we asked. Why are we crying? And what's the purpose of these tears? To do that, and to unpack some of this poetry from the psalmist, let's try and understand a fascinating sub-layer within Shir HaMalos. We've done the surface layer description, the imagery that it pulls up. What's the sub-layer? In order to do that, we're going to have to play a little game. The game is, when have we heard these words before? In technical speak, that would be called intertextuality, which is, there's something in this text which has resonances with another text. It's almost like they're being set up to talk to each other. Where have we heard some of the themes in this text before? So let's start with this strange word, alumot, which here means sheaves of wheat. Maybe bundles of wheat. The word alumot only appears one other place in Tanakh. That's right, in the dream of Yosef, where there are sheaves of wheat. Now that's interesting. This word alumos, describing the sheaves of wheat here in Shir HaMalos, is also referring to the sheaves of, or they said the only other time that word appears in Tanakh is in the dreams of Yosef. But let's go further. How does Shir HaMalos begin? Hayinu kecholmim, we were like dreamers. So at the beginning of the capital it talks about dreams, and at the very end of the capital it uses a word that only ever appears in one other context, Yosef's dream. There's another, so the beginning talks about Yosef, maybe. The end talks about Yosef, but maybe the middle of the capital talks about Yosef as well. Why? We said, Shuvah Hashem Shaviseinu ka'afikim ba'negev. Like afikim, like flash floods in the desert. Return your captives like flash floods in the desert. Now that word is a very, very unusual word as well. In actual fact, there's only one other place in the Chumash where we have that word in a slightly different form. Here, afikim is in a noun. What would it be in a verb? Lihitapek or lihisapek. What does that mean? To hold back. Where do we see Lihisapeit, in Yosef's story, that when the brothers confront Yosef, and finally he reveals himself, Lo yachol Yosef lihisapeit. He's not able to hold back his tears. He stands there in front of the brothers, and he cries, and he says, I am your brother Yosef. So we've seen that somehow, in a psalm, in a capital that talks about the return to Zion, that talks about the journey that we are struggling to make and that we're mourning that we haven't yet fully made at this time of the 3 weeks, this psalm has as a hidden meaning something about the Yosef story, Yosef and his brothers. The question now is why? Why would Kapitel Kuf Chavav have allusions, have some connection to the Yosef story? So here's the hypothesis. Maybe the reason that there are these connections is because the psalmist sees a connection between that first Golus, that first sending of the son of Zion down to exile, to all further Golias. There's something about that experience that we need to learn for all subsequent experiences. What could that message be? Because, as far as I'm aware, there aren't that many connections between the Yosef story and subsequent Golias. There's no Potiphar's wife. There's no butler and baker. There are no massive dreams, necessarily. So what is the connection? And perhaps the answer is tears. Let's look at these tears, the metaphors of tears that appear both in the story of Kuf Chaf Vav and also in the story of Yosef. Let's go back to that connection we just made. Lo yachol Yosef lihisapik. Yosef couldn't hold back his tears. He couldn't hold himself back from what? From crying. Now, if you are standing in the position of the brothers, what do you see? You see the viceroy of Egypt. A man who until now has been stone cold, has been putting hardship upon you and your family to demand Shimon should stay, Binyamin should come down, I'm not going to give you an easy ride, it's all conditional upon these different tasks that seem bizarre and challenging and pushing at each moment. And all of a sudden, the facade that this man has is pulled away. He takes off the mask, so to speak. And the commentators ask, why didn't he need to wear a mask? Well, he had his beard, he had his different outfit. You didn't expect to see, right? No one expects a Spanish Inquisition. No one expects to see Yosef standing as the viceroy of Egypt. The mask is pulled back, and there's a flood of tears. So it's like a flash flood in the desert. At first it was dry, and now there are torrents of tears. So there is something about the tears of Yosef that seem to be appropriately described as Afikim Banegev. But there's another set of tears in the description of Kuf Chaf Vav, of Shir HaMaalos. Hazoirim Badima Berina Yiksoiru. There's someone who's Hailuch Yelech Uvachon, someone who's walking around and crying. Now these aren't the tears of going from dry to a flash flood. These are continuous, ongoing tears, walking around almost in a confusion. He's holding his seed pouch, he's waiting for his bundles of wheat. Who is that person who doesn't stop crying in the Yosef story? Yaakov. In our first Torah way, we talked about why Yaakov is the man that can't stop crying. Rashi already dings in when Yaakov says, Ki Ered, Albani Eva Sha'ola, I'm going to go down to my grave mourning my son. Rashi explains, why is he someone who can't get over the loss of his child? Yes, losing a child is one of the most tragic things a person can do. And yes, that grief is intense and it's powerful, but most people will be able to somehow move on past that experience. Why does Yaakov say so openly, I can't get past that experience? Rashi says, a person can't receive tanchumin, comfort, about someone who is really alive and he thinks he's dead. What's the issue with Yaakov? There's no body. There's no one to bury. There's no closure to this experience. In our first Heroway, we described, when I was growing up, the one person that we used to pray for in North West London Jewish Day School was Ron Arad. Ron Arad, the lost parachuter who was parachuted out in a covert operation over Lebanon, and he was captured, and they never returned his body. And his widow was waiting and waiting, and she was always grieving why there was never a body to return. But there's a moment of joy for Yaakov as well. Bo yavo verina, no say, alumo sof. Why is he so happy? In Shir HaMalos, it describes this man who's walking backwards and forwards. He's happy because he's finally got his sheaves of wheat. And in the Yaakov story as well, at the end, he has his food. There was famine. He sent his sons down to Egypt to get food, and they came back with plenty, with food. There's something a bit unsatisfying about that answer. If I was to ask you, why is Yaakov happy at the end of the Yosef story? It's not because he finally has something to feed his family. I mean, he might be happy about that. But it's not only because of that. It's not just about the wheat. Wheat allows Yaakov to live. Having his son back gives him a reason to live. It's what makes life worth living. But maybe this word, alumos, can signify two different things. Maybe it can signify both the food and the person. Because the first time we ever see alumos in the Torah, it also signifies two things. Yosef has a dream. He has a dream that there are these sheaves of wheat that bound down to his sheaf. So on the one hand, it's wheat in the dream. On the other hand, it's people. Maybe that's what Kuf Chaf Vav says as well. He's happy. No say alumosov. He's happy holding his wheat. Why? Because he's got his food, but really also because he's got his son back. He's got his son, which is allegorically represented by the wheat. So Shir HaMalos seems to be telling us something about the Yosef story. But what does it tell us about our experience of Geula and Golus? We've made these linkages. We've seen how tears, Yosef's tears, Yaakov's tears, seem to be a feature. What do they tell us about our experience of tears today as well? So I'd like to explore that in two stages. The first is to say that maybe Shir HaMalos is teaching us something in particular about Yosef's dream. It's giving us a particular insight into Yosef's dream. Because let's look at the story of the alumos. Where do they appear in the Yosef story? Beginning, middle, or end?
Beginning.
Where do they appear in Kapitel Kuf Chaf Vav? At the end. Is that a mistake? They start in the Yosef story at the very beginning. Yosef's journey begins with these dreams that then cause the jealousy of his brothers. That's the hishtalshelus of the story. It starts there. Where do we conclude with the Alumosov? We conclude with them at the end of Kuf Chaf Vav. Is it out of place? No, they're not out of place. Maybe we have to understand that when Yosef had his dream, it was misinterpreted by his brothers. What did his brothers see of these dreams? They saw this young upstart saying, your sheaves of wheat are banged down to me. Here I am, this cocky 17-year-old, and I'm lording it over my senior brothers. That's how they interpreted the dream. But what can we see in the dream? It's not about the brothers bowing down to him right then and there when he was 17 and they were older. The little pipsqueak, the upstart. What is it prophetically projecting into the future? A time when Yosef will be the viceroy of Egypt, providing wheat for the entire civilized world and for his family. It's projecting a time, an opportunity, where Yosef will, a man of responsibility now, a man of integrity, a man who is quite shrewd and powerful, will be able to use all those kochos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given him to save many, many millions of lives. Now that interpretation of the dream, that maybe that's a little bit fanciful on my part. Is there any textual links between the dream and what the dream might be foretelling? Well, the first thing to notice is in that pasuk, V'lo yachol Yosef li'isapik at the end, at the denouement of the Yosef story, where he reveals himself, he says, I can't hold back anymore, I'm going to have to cry. Now there's a context to where that happens. There are these attendants that are surrounding the viceroy of Egypt, and he doesn't want to cry in front of them. So he sends them out, and how does it describe those people? L'chol ha-nitzavim alav, to all the people who are nitzav around him. That's interesting. How does it describe the standing up of the sheaves of wheat in Yosef's dream? Kama alumasi v'gam nitzava. My sheaf stood itself up, v'gam nitzava, and there it was standing tall. So that's the first connection. The next connection is, Yosef says to the brothers, Lo atem, shalachtem osi heino. You didn't send me here. You didn't send me here. Ki'im Elokim, God sent me here. The brothers go back to their father and say, Oh, Yosef Chai, Yosef's still alive. The Chihu Moshel, the whole Eretz Mitzrayim. And now he's the ruler of the whole of the land of Egypt. When the brothers heard the initial dream, what do they describe? What do they say about Yosef? Habashol Tim Shalbanu, you're going to rule over us? Now they're reporting back to the father, he's the Moshel of the whole of Mitzrayim. And the third link seems to be, how does Yosef understand his journey? Lo atem shalaftem osi heinok, ki im elokim. You didn't send me, brothers. It wasn't you chucking me into the pit. God sent me. How does he know God sent him? Because God gave him a dream. Sheaves of wheat. Now I'm able to provide sheaves of wheat. Maybe the first link that Sharmanos is making for us is to give us an interpretation of Yosef's dream, that Yosef's dream was prophetically saying that there would be a plan to this suffering. There was method to the madness. And maybe that's the first beginnings of a lesson for us to take from Shir HaMalos to contemporary Golus, is that sometimes it feels like there is no method to the madness. Sometimes it feels like we're just awash in a sea of pain, in a sea of Golus and darkness. No. There is a plan. There is a light. There is a purpose. But we can take this even further with the final stage of today's presentation. What's this tear metaphor all about? Let's go back to that image of Yaakov, Halech Yelech Uvachoy, wandering in confusion and in complex grief at the loss of his son, a son that isn't quite dead, that he can never fully end his mourning for. He's described in Kapitokuf Chavov as having a Meshe Chazara, a seed pouch. Now in the Yosef story, is there any time the word Meshech appears? Now Meshech is a noun in Kuf Chavov. What would it be in a verb? Just as we took Afikim, made it Lehisapeg, what would be Meshech? It would be Limshoich. They drew him out of the pit. It's described that they drew the Limshoich, that the Ishmaelites drew him out of the pit. The Yimshechu Vayalu Oso Min Habor. They drew him out of the pit. No say Meshech Hazara. Who's carrying Yosef? No sim nechot, tzrivalot. The Ishmaelite traders are carrying some spices in their wagons down to Mitzrayim. They're carrying something. Who are they carrying also? They're carrying Yosef. Why is Yosef a seed? Well, now we understand, because if Yosef is described in Kuf Chavav at the end as alumos, as the sheaf of wheat that can both mean food and a person, you need to get that sheaf of wheat somehow, you need to begin with a seed. What do we do with a seed when we begin a journey with a seed? We put it in the ground. What happens to Yosef at the beginning of this story? He's put in the ground. He's cast into a pit, no less, by the brothers. Now what's the one thing that the Torah describes as the characteristic of that pit? V'habor reik, ein bo mayim. What's the one thing a seed needs in order to survive? Water. Who's going to provide the water to allow the seed to become a sheaf of wheat? Well, there's one person that doesn't give up on his son, that doesn't let him go, that doesn't fully process his grief. There's someone who provides water in the form of tears to a seed that has been put in a barren soil. Who's that? Yaakov. he continues to cry. And doesn't that feature in the Yosef story? Why does he resist Potiphar's wife? He sees his father's image. Why is it that he is able to persevere, not only to persevere, but to be strong, to have chen throughout his time? It's not because he knows someone is crying for him. He doesn't know that his father is crying for him. This is not a psychological reality. This is a spiritual reality. Someone hasn't given hope, given up hope on this soul, and therefore the soul remains strong. Hazorim b'dima, b'rina iksorim. The person who planted with tears, that planted that seed with those tears, would then be able to reap in joy, because the seed was watered. Let's start to pull some things together. Doesn't our mourning for the Chorban HaBayis and all the other tragedies that befell us during this time and continue to befall us, doesn't it share the same characteristic of Yaakov's mourning? Isn't it the mourning that never ends? Just as those tears that Yaakov continued to cry connected him to Yosef for those many, many years of separation, so too our tears, year on year, connect us to a place we never experienced and a people that passed that we never knew. They connect us across time and space to those that came before us. It's been 2,000 years, but we've never moved on from the loss of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence in our national life. When you never move on, what happens when there's finally the opportunity to connect? What happens when the brothers approached Yosef and they revealed that their father had never given up hope? The mask came down, that appearance of dry Negev came down, and there was a flash flood, a torrent of return. That's the second message of Shir HaMalos. The reason that we are connecting the Geula and Golus of Tzioi to the story of Yosef is to teach the power of tears. It's the power to stay connected, ready at a split second to allow the Afikim to fertilize the Negev. Maybe there's one final message in Kuf Chaf Vav. It's very interesting. Does Yaakov know what he's crying for? Does Yaakov know there's a purpose to his tears? He doesn't know. He doesn't think that Yosef's alive. He's going about searching for something, even though he doesn't know if there's going to be anything found at the end. It seems to me that our experience of modern-day Zion seems to be a little bit similar to that. People who were not searching for Geula, people who weren't looking for a return to Bayis Shlishi, fighting what they thought was a nationalist cause, was a political cause, was a ethical cause, a moral cause, but not ever a religious journey. Nevertheless, became the people that seemed to have started a journey home. There's something about the drive within each and every one of us, whether we know that there's a religious, vital significance to the journey back to Eretz Yisrael, or we think it's something secular and something not. There's something that drives us, just like Yaakov is driven. Maybe that's the third message. There's some hiding of our face, a hiding behind a mystery, and it's the tears that allow us to connect again. For me, that's what this day is all about. Let's relive the Yaakov and Yosef story. Let's experience what it is to have Shir HaMalos. Let's cry those tears and reconnect again. Thank you very much. Yeah. Very good.